Every time we have a guest on the podcast, we focus on what that person accomplished, the strategy, the journey, the mental mindset. But sometimes we overlook the footwear that took them from point A to point B. Even the best athletes have problems with footwear that's mass-produced and designed for maximum profit while sacrificing quality. And then there's today's sponsor, Speedland. Speedland is changing the game with the all-new SLPDX, trail footwear made from the most premium components available today. Listen to this trail runner wish list. It's the first shoe to ever feature BOA's Li2 fit system. It has dual dials with multi-directional incremental dialing for a perfect fit. The midsole uses a new formulation of PBEX foam for ultimate energy return. Then there's the Carbitex carbon fiber plate with asymmetrical flex. It's stiff in one direction and flexible in the other. Finishing it off, the SLPDX uses a Michelin wrap outsole with a customizable lug pattern that can be adjusted for any terrain. When we say it's all there, it's all there. Plus, Speedland gives back 10% of all profits to outdoor organizations chosen by their athletes. And once the shoe reaches the end of its life cycle, you can send it back where it will be disassembled and recycled. So check out the Speedland SLPDX over at runspeedland.com or at the link in our description. Follow them on Instagram at runspeedland and drop a note in their inbox if you have any questions.
Welcome back to the Fastest Known Podcast, talking with the fastest people as usual from around the world. And this time we're back across the pond. So here's a trivia question for you. Are you ready for this one? Who is on the number two person on the all-time FKT list? So Jason Hardrath has been on the podcast once or twice. He just finished his 100th. But who is number two? Well, I'm going to tell you who that is. I'm speaking with David Bone from London, England. Welcome, David.
Hey, Buzz. How are you, my friend?
Well, I'm doing pretty well, and obviously you're doing very well also. In case people aren't following this that closely, you have 89 FKTs. Jason, you know, he was going for 100. He just did it with his about 3 days ago with his Washington Bulgars. And Ben Nephew is at 71. Then it drops off fast after that. So the podium currently is clear. Now, I want to note there is no podium. It's not a competition, but still, 89, that's a lot, David. So what's up with this? Fill us in.
So, I must mention, I'm a huge fan and admirer of Jason and Mr. Hardrath. I've been very lucky enough to have a few one-to-one conversations with him, and we had this sort of little private in-joke buzz sort of a couple of months ago, because I noticed that Jason had this hashtag on his Instagram called Journey to 100 FKTs. And I was just like, you know, what happens, Jason, if I get to 100 FKTs before you? And he was a bit like, yeah, you wouldn't, would you? So we started to get in this conversation about what he was going to do for his 100th, which, as you mentioned, was the Washington Bulgars, which is truly astonishing. It's a real mind-blowing adventure that he's just undertaken, and I was just in awe. I just loved it. So I privately said to him, look, I'm not going to try and, as we say in England, nick a few FKTs and get to 100 before you. I could never do that. So, I must firstly say, yeah, total respect to Jason. Yeah, that's wonderful achievement.
Well, what a great community. You two were communicating with each other. And like you say, you could have nicked him, because the Bulgars are the 100 highest summits. Yeah. So that's not going to take 1 hour. You know, that took, you know, I actually forgot how long it took, but it was more than a month. And so that took him some time. By the way, we're recording this on August 7th right now, for the listeners know where we're at in time and space. And so you could have made a late charge, but I'm looking at the list here, David, and you have done 51 so far in 2021. That's almost two per week. So you've got to be, this is intentional. You're not just out here casually, oh, what am I going to do today? You must have a project here. Am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's probably two or three things, Buzz, that are sort of colliding at the same time. So My first FKT was called the Capital Ring here in London, Buzz. And I guess when I got that record with my running buddy, Darren, I mean, that didn't lead to any more FKTs. It was very specific about it. It's on the podcast you had a couple of weeks ago with the two mics. You know, it's definitely what I would call one of the blue ribboned FKTs, the Capital Ring, you know. So we're going very specifically for that one. But then the pandemic hit, Buzz. And as been mentioned on many of your other great podcasts, all the races were taken away. There was a feeling of keeping things very local. And I remember one of your podcasts in the very early days where you interviewed a gentleman from the UK and he started to share with you the real kind of history of some of the FKTs. And I got really bought into the history, Buzz. I started to research myself about, you know, some of the rivers that used to be in London that are no longer there, but, you know, geologists have worked out, you know, overground routes to kind of follow the river. And, you know, a lot of things in the UK have this sort of epic kind of historical connotation. I started this journey where there were a few FKT routes that were already listed. So I did a few of those FKTs here in London. But really every week I was probably adding a new route as quickly as I was doing a route that already existed in the FKT. So I did that for a few months, Buzz, and probably got up to about 25 FKTs. And that was probably when I first realized about the, as you said, the leaderboard that doesn't exist. And I saw Ben's name and I saw, you know, the people around the kind of, I mean, I remember at the time seeing kind of Killian's name, Mike Wardian, and even Peter's name and thinking, wow, you know, I'm kind of brushing unofficial shoulders with the giants. So that was it, Buzz. You know, there was a sort of an initial period, but then that sort of feeling, okay, well, this is interesting. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying sharing the FKT journey, which I think is something that Jason absolutely cherishes as well. So it's become a combination of things since then.
Right. Well said, David. Yeah, people could be streakers. They could run every day for a few years. They could run the same race all the time. And I think the human mind likes to orientate around something.
Yeah.
And as you said, and Jason has said, it's the journey. And so by having this little framework to participate in, you get to explore your home country, particularly your home city. So why not? It makes sense. And again, 89 is quite a bit, and that just basically started in 2020. Capital Ring was at the end of 2019, and 51 in 2021. So you're getting after it. Now, so you are, I mean, do you have a goal? I mean, you must have a goal here. Sorry to pin you down. I know it's the journey, it's in the process, but I have to presume you want to get to 100.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's something quite fun and joyful about, you know, sort of reaching that centenary mark. I like many other people in the kind of ultra running and FKT world, I love the kind of statistics. I love to keep a spreadsheet, Buzz. So, I mean, I've probably got a spreadsheet of about, I'd say, not far off 200 routes that I think I could do, you know, if I had the time. And obviously, as you know extremely well, there's a lot that goes behind attempting an FKT. I mean, they're not all on your doorstep. So there's the travel, there's the kind of the family life balance. So it's always wonderful when you can kind of bring in FKTs with other things that you're doing in life. So, but you know, yeah, I could see a way to go from kind of 90 to about 180 in about another year's time. After that, I think we get to a point where I guess it'll be interesting to know more from yourself, Buzz. I mean, in terms of the growth, as you've explained on podcasts, especially in the US and in the UK, you know, when do we think we've got enough roots? You know, when, because I'm seeing, you know, obviously clearly the real classics, they already exist within the FKT, and we're seeing lots of truly amazing athletes going for these really, you know, incredible routes. But I still think that there's parts of the UK which aren't served by good trails yet. So it's always good to know that, you know, other areas can have their own FKTs. And so there's plenty there. But, I mean, there has to become a point where, you know, I mean, I've tried to get a few FKTs past yourself and Peter before, and you've refused them for different reasons. There's always going to be a point where you go, like, look, like in London, because obviously for me, I'm very passionate about sharing that there are true trail routes within London, and that you can very easily get off tarmac and parks and get out into kind of forests and things. But you famously refused what was called the Princess Diana Memorial Walk. Do you remember this one, Buzz?
Yeah, actually, I can't remember the route, but I definitely remember the name. I definitely remember coming across my desk.
Yeah, you were quite kind for the first few months, because you got into the history of the stuff that I was sharing. I was always putting a lot of detail in there, you know, 16th century and castles and this, that, and the other. And I thought, oh yeah, this Princess Diana, Buzz is just going to go, this is brilliant. And the thing about the Princess Diana walk is it's supposed to go from, you know, Kensington Palace through the Royal Gardens, which, you know, was a route that she took. But as you, this was pre-pandemic, and you said that this would be good if we were known as the slowest known time .com because of all the potential tourists, which I guess was kind of true. And then obviously we had the pandemic and there were no tourists, but so that one never got in. But yeah,
this is great. We have a guest on the podcast who I've denied something to. So now you got equal opportunity to argue it back and say I was full of baloney. So this is good.
Yeah, no, I love the challenges. There have been other FKTs that I have submitted, and we've always, I guess, whether it's the same in the US or different, but there's the challenge, because we have a lot of races here, so there's a lot of potential for someone to submit an FKT, and then someone else to say, but there's a race, or there's a similar race on the route. And
right.
And also something else that I want to do at a certain point, Buzz, is the entire English coastal path. And I mean, you have various sections of the coastal path. So there's a very famous bit, the Southwest Coastal Path, which Damien Hall and Christian Morgan have done. But it's not really clear as to what the proper full English coastal path is, because a lot of it goes on to some of the islands, and some of the islands, they don't have an official route round. So when I submitted one, which is called Mersey Island, which is off a place called Essex in the UK, and it's a beautiful route. It's a beautiful trail. But yeah, it was kind of refused because in the past there's been a race there, and obviously the race organizers keep a log, don't they, Buzz, of people that have successfully completed that race. But I guess my challenge at the time was trying to bring the FKT to a wider audience, and the difference between like supported, which races are FKTs, and the notion of, you know, unsupported bars or mixed teams, which typically you don't get, do you, in races, because, you know, you're having to provide your own fuel and things. So yeah,
that's not David. Well, you've thought about this, and your questions and queries are exactly correct. We've thought about the same things. And what you start off by saying is completely correct, which is it's a gray area. I mean, I really wish we could say this is an FKT route and this is not. But think about that. It cannot be objectively defined, right? You could lay this out in 20 sentences and you're still going to have judgment calls that have to be made. And one of our initial starting judgments is that everything is not an FKT route. So people can't go out and run around the block and put it on the website. We don't want to deal with it. Other people don't want to see it. Strava already does that, right? You put something on Strava and there's 30, 100 segments there between mailboxes, just like, who cares? And so the FKT route has to be, is our main definition, something that someone else will want to do. You see what I mean? Rather than of a personal interest. And so if I'm visiting London, it's my bucket list, right? If you're visiting the United States, you say, hey, I'm going to look at the FKT routes because those are the best routes in the country. So it has to have a repeatable allure to it and not go through tribal lands or not be trespassing, you know, things like that. So the Princess Diana walk, I actually don't remember, but what you said is probably true. If it's just crowded with tourists, then it just could get a little awkward. It's like whoever wants to be the rudest would get the fastest time. But then, like you say, pandemic hits and maybe that wasn't an issue. So thanks for bringing that up, David. This is great. You can challenge me on all these things. And with your spreadsheet, you're capable of doing it.
I also had this, I don't know if it's been mentioned before, Buzz, but you know, on the previous podcast with the mics, you were talking about the rounds, the Bob Graham round and the Paddy Buckley. And so in the UK, we have a concept of winter round. So there's certain seasons which are, you know, if you do your attempt, you know, in those particular months, almost certainly you're going to have much harsher conditions than you would do if you waited for a summer. And I did a lot of my FKTs, the ones that you mentioned, kind of in the winter, which were, I don't think we always get as bad a conditions as you do in the US, but there was enough mud there, Buzz, you know, there was some interesting conditions. And I've noticed that now the spring, summer's come, you know, people have started to whittle off and beat all my FKTs. So it got me thinking as to whether that winter round was a concept, because obviously, again, you want to encourage potentially people to be enjoying and experiencing the routes all year round. And if they're waiting for constantly dry conditions, best conditions, then they're missing out potentially on a huge section of the year when they could be doing these fantastic FKT routes, you know?
Right. That's a good question. This is good. You're bringing this up that everyone is going to want to hear. So going back to your question about races, yes, our way of dealing with that is noting that if the fastest time on a route was set during a race, it's still the FKT.
Yeah.
And so we don't disallow races. We just say, well, if the race has already kept track of it, then we're not going to. And that becomes the FKT. But the gray area, like you just said, is the unsupported or self-supported. If you're in a race, it's automatically a supported event. And so you could go do the same course by yourself, and then you could get the unsupported, for example, FKT. And we've been a little shy about that because it could kind of balloon up out of control. And so we don't want to do that on common, easy things, you know what I mean? But if someone goes out and runs the Western States 100 course, you know, carrying all their own food and water, we're going to count that as an unsupported, right? So same in the UK. we races that are done unsupported, not during the, I should say race courses, they're not, are done not during the race, we'll go for that, but we'd like it to be something meaningful. Yes. So that people are going to say, okay, that means something. The person isn't just trying to game the system, so to speak. And we'd also like it to be relevant to the fastest course record time. We've had people do this. So that there's a course record on a race for 3 hours, and someone submits an FKT in an unsupported for 8 hours. And we're going, you know, really? I mean, let's kind of bring that a little more into the ballpark. And this is absurdly subjective. Our apologies. And so it's hard. Peter and I have a little joke when we are approving routes. Now, by the way, the regional editors do it. We don't do much of it anymore at all. But we'd say, wow, dashing people's hopes and dreams is no fun. And that's what it is. It's terrible. It's awful. So on one hand, we want to keep the integrity of the site up. But on the other hand, I'm an enthusiastic, supportive person by nature. I want people to succeed. I really want to support everything you're doing. Then you have to dash someone's hopes and dreams. And it's just terrible. It's gut-wrenching. So we're making these judgment calls that we would actually just as soon not make. But if you try to objectify our guidelines, you'll see that you cannot do it. You can't get to 100%.
It's interesting, Buzz. It makes me think of something else, another little project that I'm doing at the moment, Buzz, which is, again, it was pre the pandemic, which is why it's kind of stalled a bit, is this idea of exploring greenways. So, you know, especially in large cities, you know, trying to bring people into contact with projects about regeneration, taking kind of urban wasteland. And, you know, there's a lot of rewilding projects, you know, like you say, you look at Singapore and these kind of wonderful forests that are kind of blossoming inside of cities. Well, how do you then try and incorporate, you know, runs or walks that kind of link these up? And so I've got a list of these potentially quite interesting routes, Buzz, under a project called the London Greenways. But they're unfinished projects. So I've gone to explore some of them, and I'm scratching my head because it's a bit like the conversation that's happened recently about the Appalachian Trail, which is, you know, if someone interprets a leg themselves and say, right, I'm going to do this bit as an out and back, and then someone else comes along and then interprets it differently, when it isn't an established route, then, you know, and I saw that in the early days of some of the FKTs, you know, I would plot out an FKT route working with one of the regional editors, and then someone else would come along and say, okay, well, but, you know, the way that the original pilot scheme of the route suggests it, you know, we went and did another thing. And if nobody objects, Buzz, then you've kind of got a few different GPXs going floating around, haven't you, for the same
reason.
It's not a bad thing, but I guess, like I said, that's an interesting one in terms of trying to establish some new things when, you know, there could be some really fantastic stuff there. It could really be useful, especially in London, to bring to the attention to runners an area that's not currently well served. But like I say, there's not a really well polished version of the route yet. And so I'm out there trying, but haven't figured it out myself.
Well, good. David, that's an excellent approach. I like the fact that you contacted the regional editor and some other people, because we can't be experts around the world. That's why we want the regional editors. We want the local community to have some degree of consensus of what the optimal route is. And occasionally we'll approve something, then a few months later, someone will write in and say, nobody does this. This is terrible. What everyone here does, and this some slight variations, like, wow, okay. And so sometimes we'll change it. So we are, here's the word, we are crowdsourced. We don't invent roots. You do. And we just manage it and we edit and try to keep it in a level playing field. That's what we do. So it's a crowdsourced website. So to the degree that the community participates is the degree of quality of roots that we have. It's a struggle. It's interesting. And it's dynamic. So thank you for having a good-natured approach to it, David, because to say we got this perfect, that would be absurd. That's literally not ever going to happen. There always will be some discussion.
Yeah.
But now, in terms of the UK, you have this great history. And so we like to go with local. And so, for example, on the rounds, they have a different verification technique. You know, like in the Bob Graham, you got to be there with someone who's done it before. I mean, this is all pre-GPS, so they don't care about your GPS tracks. We do. And so you have this history that we try to respect, of course.
Yeah.
And part of that is the winter one. So winter gets tricky because there's different definitions of winter, isn't there? And so we tend to stay away from that because the definition of winter, you know, changes. You know, geographically, it's, you know, the winter definition is the winter solstice to the spring equinox. But the UK doesn't use that.
Yeah.
They use a different date system. And then the other tricky thing is, say, if you get a really mild December, then you can go out there and crush the winter record in summer conditions. So we, to establish a winter variation, we need it to be in a tough climate. You know what I mean? We're not going to do a winter variation for Southern California. You know, it would have to be for like Mount Rainier or things like that, or Ben Nevis,
yeah,
things of that nature.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally interesting. It made me also think, Buzz, about so we're very unfamiliar with the concept of a picnic, which is again, which is something that Jason brought to our attention. But you know, I personally got a lot of friends who they would classify themselves as not strong runners, but especially through the pandemic, they've got into open water swimming, and obviously, I saw it in the Olympics, Buzz. I mean, I think the sport of climbing is going to literally just explode. So are you a fan of the picnic concept? And do you see that sort of growing outside of the US? I'm guessing it's only in the US at the moment, isn't it, on the FPT?
Right. So the picnic is, they've been going on for a long time. It's multi-sport is all it is. And it's oddly, or not oddly, for some reason, it really got going in Jackson, Wyoming.
Yeah.
And used to be the annual pole, pedal, and paddle, which is a super classic race. And then New Zealand, of course, basically invented adventure racing.
Yeah.
And they did the Southern Traverse, going across the Southern Island with running, kayaking, and cycling. But the picnic was invented by a guy also from Jackson, and that's swimming across Jenny Lake. So he added the swim section to it before climbing the Grand Teton and so forth.
Yeah.
So the picnic, for the listeners who don't know, is a, what's the word? A kind of a joking term for a multi-sport. And as you know, Jason Hardrath, he got into it, and we actually denied a couple of those, by the way. I don't know if I told you that or not. And so for our perspective, it has to have a degree of logic. So if you're biking to a summit and there's a lake there, you can get off the bike, swim across the lake, and start climbing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We want a certain logic to it. But if you kind of go somewhere else to swim across that lake, which doesn't have anything to do with your route otherwise, we don't really like that. Does that make sense?
It makes
sense. We like a little bit of logic.
I really want to see if we can create one here in the UK, but yeah, it's gonna need a lot more thought. It's probably gonna need some good local attention, I think, Buzz. I mean, I imagine the Lake District and Scotland and Wales are probably better served for the concept than elsewhere in the UK. But yeah,
you don't want to swim across the Thames.
I've always dreamt of swimming across the Thames, Buzz.
Oh, really?
Oh, but, yeah, you're not allowed.
Well, actually, this is a good question, David. I have a tip for you. I have a suggestion. Paddle. Drop the swim and paddle. There's a move in multi-sport activities, triathlons. I'm doing one tomorrow. I'm doing a triathlon tomorrow.
Yeah.
That is paddle, bike, run.
Right.
So we're substituting the kayak for the swim. So if you live in a northern climate, this has obvious positive attributes to it. You know, you don't have to wear a wetsuit. And swimming, as you know, is kind of hard. You know, it's like, what? Yeah. I mean, okay, I can run, I can bike, swim. That's something else. Well, paddling can kind of level the playing field a little bit. And if the weather is bad, if it's cold, you're okay. Or if the water isn't super clean, it's okay. So like for you, you've got islands everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. So I think there's a lot of multi-sports possible for the people in the UK using the paddle rather than a swim.
Yeah.
The Swedes, they have a term for this, which I can't pronounce. Sorry about that. But they do a lot of swim runs and they go to islands, right?
Yeah.
They do multiple. They'll swim to an island, run across it, swim to another island, run across that, things like that, which is very cool. Water seems a little cold to me, but maybe I'm just a wimp.
Are they on the fastest? Are any of those swim run routes on the fastest known website, Buzz?
A few are.
Right.
And we just had one come in out of North Carolina, maybe it was South Carolina, where he did the same thing. He just swam out to an island and ran around the island and swam back.
Yeah.
So that's quite possible. But for you, particularly if you're islands, I would rather be in a kayak myself than swimming in that. And it's the same thing. So for FKT purposes, none of that matters. All that matters for, I think you know this, David, but I'll just say it again. 50% by time must be running or hiking.
Yeah.
Then you can do anything else you want. And like you said, climbing. Yeah. Climbing is very cool. Like the Olympics, the competition, climbing is a great spectator event, as it turns out.
Yeah.
Paddling, swimming, skiing. You can do anything else you want as long as 50%, not by mileage, but by time, is running or hiking.
Yeah. Have you seen online, Buzz, there's been quite a lot of people discussing in the kind of ultra marathon space, the endurance space, about because we're seeing so many new sports, aren't we, in Tokyo, whether there's a possibility of getting kind of endurance sports into future Olympics, which could be quite interesting for us.
Well, yeah, you watch on the telly and you're looking at this and going, what? That's an Olympic sport? You know, like, really? And there's 20 sports in the Olympics that you and I have never heard of.
Yeah.
So I think for Paris in 2024, there's going to be podcasting. I think podcasting is an Olympic sport. I think I can make a comeback here. What do you think?
Boom. Give him the gold. Did you see the karate where there was no opponent? So you fought against an imaginary opponent.
I missed that one.
So you could have an extreme version of podcasting where you're like interviewing yourself.
Ooh, I get an
Olympic sport.
I could just change my voice. I could put on a British accent and interview myself. Yeah, okay, I see that. But the things that made it in, I think, are good.
Yeah.
Climbing, like you say, climbing is very legitimate, very good, spectator friendly, and skateboarding. Sorry, whatever you think, there's millions of skateboarders around the world.
Yeah.
While there's, I'm not sure how many Greco-Roman wrestlers there are, et cetera, et cetera. But by the way, on the topic, GBR, the Great Britain has had a good Olympics, good runs.
Sensational.
Really, your athletics team has been very successful, so congratulations.
Yeah.
Stateside, the women runners have done great as usual. The men, not so much, as can sometimes be the case. So, well done. Huge tradition. I mean, the Olympics, it's like the UK, England, this is core. You've been doing this forever.
Yeah. Have there been any standout US performances, Buzz? What's impressive?
Well, Molly Seidel was third in the Olympic marathon.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Yesterday. And wow. Yeah. I mean, there was like 10 people in the field or, you know, sub 220 runners. And this is her third race, and she got third.
Yeah.
So Olympic dreams come true.
I think one of my favorite, my proudest things I've seen as a Brit, Buzz, has been we have a diver called Tom Daly. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of him. And so he's been competing in multiple Olympics before. And this is the first Olympics that he's won a gold medal, but he's quite an iconic figure, and he's been seen knitting in the audience during the Olympics. And maybe knitting will be in Paris 2024 with podcasting, Buzz.
Okay, podcasting, knitting. Surfing is going to be back, but they're not going to be surfing in Paris. They're going to be surfing in Tahiti.
No way.
So, they've migrated the surfing venue to Tahiti, which once was a French colony.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. Well, we better move on, because otherwise I'm going to start getting irritated at the huge budget, the graft and corruption of the IOC. And you don't want to get me going on that topic. I mean, the athletes are amazing. The sport is amazing. I just love it all, what everyone is doing. But the overall huge bureaucracy and how the Olympics sometimes saps the economy of the local city and the local country, like Rio de Janeiro, that wasn't a good look. And so I would like them to scale this down to a more manageable size and make it a little more economically and environmentally sustainable. My personal opinion.
Yeah.
Okay. So your spreadsheet, David, you've got a big runway here. I could ask you what's coming up next, but that'd take another 30 minutes. So how would you phrase what's coming up next? Just keep going. I'm looking at your list here, and you sometimes do two FKTs in the same day.
Yeah. I mean, I really am very passionate about sort of sharing that, you know, anyone can do FKTs, Buzz, you know, and I think whilst, you know, I've got personal sort of sporting running ambitions, you know, I'm quite happy to sort of scale things back in terms of, you know, size of FKTs, you know. So whilst I do look at and dream about pretty big, epic kind of mileage of FKTs, yeah, I mean, I love the fact that you can do a 10-kilometer, you know, beautiful, historic kind of route and make it much more accessible. And as you said, there is a concept of out and back. So that, you know, if someone has loaded up a route and it's a cool route and you end up kind of trying to get to the start, and maybe if you need to get back to the start, well, you run the out and back as well as the original one. So,
That counts as two.
I'm personally, you know, not trying to do too many of them for various reasons, but you know, logistically, sometimes if the car happens to be at the start, Buzz, it's pretty handy to get back to the start and go pretty hard on both legs. But I've got some good ambitions. There is a really wonderful website in the UK called the Long Distance Walkers Association. So it's called LDWA. And, you know, the people that look after and contribute to that website, you know, it's, you know, on a volunteer basis. I mean, these guys really know their mustard. You know, they know the history, they know the roots, and they've got hundreds and hundreds of volunteers constantly going out and checking waymarks and styles and, you know, and fundraising to kind of repair these routes. So pretty much anything you find on that website, it is special. And there's a particular route, Buzz. I live in East London, very near the Olympic Stadium. And there is a route that's been created which links all the historic trail routes all the way from London to where the sailing took place in the 2012 Olympic Games, which is down on the south coast. So it's just over 200 kilometers. It's called the Games Way, but it has some of the kind of toughest trail routes that you can navigate between London and the south coast. I know one of my friends did one of these as an FKT a few weeks ago, Buzz, and he was saying it was so overgrown, the trail, you know, it was literally, you got ambushed by nettles and swampy areas. It would be quite a tough FKT, but that's the kind of level of thing that I'm really excited about and trying to do a few punchier ones out there.
Gotcha. That makes sense. That sounds like a classic route, but stinging nettles are no fun on bare legs. Well, David, you are, for listeners should know this, you are married and you have a teenage daughter and a teenage son. So yep. I like what you said about this. Anyone can do this. You're a good example. You know, you're a married man. You're a family man. Yep. You're getting it done. And you're not traveling to Antarctica. You're not going to the highest mountains in South America. You're doing it kind of in your backyard.
Yeah.
And fortunately, the UK has this insane history, I mean, hundreds of years. And we'll put the Long Distance Walkers Association website in the written show notes. I've been to that website numerous times. That's a great bucket list right there.
Yeah. 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 Like, I mean, a really good example, Buzz, is that, a couple of months ago, I was just looking at a few sort of groups on Strava, London-based groups, Buzz, and someone had entitled their particular route, the Rodding River. And I was looking at the map and I was like, wow, this is really close to where I live. And, you know, obviously Strava has these features like heat maps, where you can kind of see, you know, where more people are finding particular routes. And so I got in contact with this guy, Regis, and I was just like, this is a great route. Have you ever heard of fastestknowntime.com? Like, we should explore this, you know. And he'd never heard about FKT, but, you know, he was really, you know, sort of proud of this sort of find of, again, an historic river that kind of went between two quite uniquely different parts of London, you know, a sort of a very green part in the north part of London. Buzz,
is the river not there anymore?
So in the start of the route that we eventually did submit onto the FKT site, you start in an area where the river would have been, you know, like when it's mapped out, but you can join bits of the river that still exists. And then it finds itself into a very industrial part of the Thames in kind of East London. I mean, like I said, a totally unexplored area, I'm sure, for many Londoners. It's like, they call it kind of like brutalism, I think, Buzz, where something on one hand looks pretty ugly and intense, but, you know, it's kind of got this interesting kind of beauty to it from an old, you know, unloved part of kind of architecture. So, yeah, it's just an absolutely wonderful find of, you know, a part of the trail route kind of goes under the motorway. There's a huge amount of kind of crazy graffiti in these underpasses. There's a brilliant bit, Buzz, where you, on part of the river, there are somehow people living. They've managed to kind of get some boats there, and it's really obscured. So unless you were actually doing the FKT route, you wouldn't ever know that this existed. And on the day that I did the route, there was a cabin there that they've purpose-built to do kind of like a little sauna, like a little heat room. So they're like these naked bodies coming out of this little hut, Buzz, going off into these private boats. So you just wouldn't find these things elsewhere, would you, unless you were discovering the gems on FKT?
You don't have to explore the mountaintops. You can explore the underbellies of our own cities.
Underbellies, exactly. Yeah.
And there are things there. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've done that in India, of all places.
Wow.
Other parts of the world. And there's wildness, isn't there? There's adventure to be found in many unexpected places.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I think I'd like more and more people to recognize that, you know, that these are just wonderful routes, and that the FKT website is a fantastic resource. You're not necessarily needing to be chasing after the records. It's, you know, there's great richness in there in terms of the content of what people are sharing, in terms of, you know, the logistics and what you might find on the route and how you might be able to link up one route to another. So I think more and more people need to find out about these things.
I agree, David, and thank you very much. This is terrific. It's so good to talk to you. I've seen your name, of course, at least 89 times, apparently more like 95 times. Sorry about those other six. And so it's wonderful to catch up in person. Thanks for sharing your perspective and enthusiasm.
No worries. It's a real pleasure, Buzz.